This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Did you know 50% of you who listen to My Millennial Money listen within the first week of an episode going live? So if you're one of the 50% of people listening to this as it goes live, it is NAIDOC Week. NAIDOC Week celebrations are held across Australia in the first week of July each year to celebrate and recognise the history, culture and achievements of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. NAIDOC Week is an opportunity for all Australians to learn about First Nations cultures and histories and participate in celebrations of the oldest continuous living cultures on Earth. You can support and get to know your local Aboriginal and or Torres Strait Islander communities through activities and events held across the country. I'm reading from the naidocweek.org.au website. So in line with NAIDOC Week and learning more, I wanted to chat with the First Nations Foundation. We support them on the podcast, and today I'm chatting with Larisha Jerome. Larisha is a community development and project officer and is involved in the Indigenous Women's Financial Wellness Strategy within the foundation. I wanted to also chat with Larisha about her story because we can all learn from each other. Last year, TAL, and TAL are our show partner, that's T-A-L, they launched their Reconciliation Action Plan, or RAP, R-A-P. In delivering on their RAP, TAL is on a journey towards improved insurance financial literacy across Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, and subsequently an environment on economic inclusivity and prosperity. TAL is committed to improving the support they can offer to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander customers with the aim to ultimately contribute towards helping them create a life filled with greater options, choices and freedoms. Check out the link in the show notes to learn more about TAL's Reconciliation Action Plan. My name's Glenn James and you're listening to My Millennial Money. Larisha, thanks so much for joining us on My Millennial Money today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you've been with First Nations Foundation for a little while now. How long have you been with the foundation?
Yeah, so I've been with the foundation for just under 2 years now.
Yeah, awesome. So a lot of people know, you know, First Nations Foundation, they are a charity that we promote and support on My Millennial Money with you know, promotion on our website and also financially. And I actually saw Larisha on an Instagram post through First Nations Foundation talking about some cool stuff that she's doing as part of her role in the foundation. And I reached out and thought, well, let's have a chat, because I just thought it was a cool story and, you know, we support the foundation. But before we kind of talk about all that stuff, I always like to hear stories of people and their money journey and just basically open up the microphone and have a chat. So if we started at the beginning, Larisha, where were you born? What was your childhood like? Tell us a bit about you.
Yeah, definitely. Well, before I begin, I'd just like to firstly acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land that I'm on today. I'm based here in North Meanjin, aka Brisbane, on Kabi Kabi country. We are the traditional and only custodians of country across Australia. I acknowledge the continuing connection to the land, waters, skies and communities. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples continue to maintain our wisdom and rich culture, the oldest continuous culture on the planet, you know, despite having experienced genocide, dispossession and colonization. I pay my respects to our elders past and present, and to any other non-Indigenous people that are listening today. So yeah, just a little bit about myself. You know, I grew up, I'm a proud Jarrawal Waka Waka and Willy Willy woman from southeast Queensland, and I grew up in Western Sydney down on Dari country. And, you know, just growing up, I think, you know, I grew up in a single mother household living in Housing Commission, and, you know, that lack mindset was kind of, you know, ingrained within our family. You know, money was never spoken about. whatsoever. That financial literacy and financial wellness was definitely non-existent within my family. You know, as soon as I could, I literally worked since I was, you know, the age of 14. And ever since then, I've been through, you know, numerous roles, whether that be in banking, you know, debt collection, financial hardship. And then my previous role to being here at the foundation, I actually worked with Women's Legal Service in the financial abuse prevention unit. So that's around, you know, domestic and family violence. So just at the peak of, you know, when COVID first began. So yeah, it was a very heavy time, definitely. And now I'm just really grateful that, you know, within this project, the Indigenous Women's Financial Wellness one, I can literally bring all of that information, all of those resources and tools all into the one project and making that, you know, accessible for Indigenous women all across the country.
You talked about a lack mindset growing up, and a lot of our listeners love talking about mindset and people's story around a transition from, you know, that type of mindset to any other type of mindset. What was that transition like for you, and did it start to happen when you started to earn your own money, and what was your first job?
Yeah, so my first job was actually, I did a school-based traineeship. So with Commonwealth Bank, so I was very lucky to go straight into that, you know, working. I was like one of the only ones that actually did the school-based traineeships as well at school. So I was, you know, making that money and I was like, you know what, I want to save and, you know, I have these goals and ambitions. So yeah, just, you know, not wanting to have the life where I'm, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, because, you know, I watched my mother struggle and I just knew that I wanted the complete opposite to that growing up. So I think it was so important for me, you know, through my own lived experiences as well. You know, I ended up being homeless at the age of 17 and I was living in residential care out in Western Sydney. And, you know, it was never ever my, you know, thought that I could own my own home. And then I ended up buying my first home at the age of 21. So it's just like, how can we empower, you know, other Indigenous kids as well that, you know, think that, you know, there's so many barriers for us to reach these goals, but if I can do it, then anybody else can as well.
Mm. So being homeless at 17, that's like so savage, isn't it? And you're not the only person who's experienced that. Like, how do you reconcile that as a 17-year-old?
I don't know, like you just, yeah, it's hard to explain, especially because, you know, back then you could only just see what was happening then and there. You had no like hope for your future really, but it's just like showing up every day, you know, making those goals. I remember, I think I was in, yeah, the residential care where I was living at the time. You know, I was very lucky that I was surrounded by, you know, other kids that were going through the exact same thing, but then they had their own goals as well. So we really, you know, it was so great within that home. There was about five of us that lived in that home, and then we did like our budgets together, and then we all cooked dinner for each other one night of the week, and then we had, you know, our chores split up. So it was kind of ingrained with us within there, and we were just supporting each other through that journey as well. And I just remember, you know, if I want to live in my own little apartment, then I had to work hard. So that's what I did. I got a job. I was working in health at the time. And then, yeah, I ended up saving up, and then I moved into my first little apartment. It was like a studio apartment. It was the tiniest thing ever. But yeah, I was so proud to move in, and like all of my furniture was all secondhand from Salvos. I slept on a mattress on the ground for so long, but I was like, you know what? This is my I made it moment. But yeah, I guess all of the experiences really lead to where I'm at today, and I wouldn't, you know, take away from any of that either.
And what was it like moving into that traineeship with Commonwealth Bank? I mean, you've pretty much went from, you know, straight from school into that early. So am I correct in saying you didn't do your year 12 HSC? I didn't do my own. I left school at 16, so I kind of like...
No, I graduated, yeah. So my school-based traineeship was in grade 11 and 12.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so during, the HSC. So that was actually counted towards my HSC, which was very lucky. And then, I went on to business school, doing my diploma in business and diploma in business administration. But, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'm old now because when I was at school, it's so fascinating. Like just as looking back at the schooling system as an autopsy, if I could have done what you did in year 11 and 12, I would have stayed in school. But for me, just this, school, learn this, remember it and regurgitate it for a test. Like it just wasn't my learning technique.
Yeah, for sure. So, I was just really grateful and really lucky. And then, I went to business school for the year because I was just like, oh, I don't know if I want to stay in banking. And so I just wanted to explore. And then I actually moved on to working in health. So I was a secretary of the emergency department and worked in intensive care at Royal Prince Alfred Hospital down in Sydney. So that was, a great experience. But after that, I was like, no, I definitely want to stay to finance. Definitely want to stay within that area. So it's just kind of organically along all of my roles, I've just always fallen into the finance area.
And where did you buy your first home at?
Yes, so I bought my first home here in Queensland. So I moved up here 4 to 5 years ago and, bought my first home.
May I ask how old you are?
So I'm 26. Yeah, cool. So I've been a homeowner for 5 years now. Love it.
So people say like, oh, you can't buy your first home, blah, blah, blah. Like, what was your experience like? Because I talk to people all the time who are in their mid-20s who have actually sacrificed and saved and purchased their first home. Like, did you have to sacrifice much in terms of your savings and prioritizing budget? Like, what was the experience like for you?
Yeah, definitely just prioritizing, what your needs versus what your wants are. I think I let a lot, when you first get into a job, you think, oh, I need to have the latest this, the latest that, the newest car and all of that stuff. And I definitely went through that period where, I was so materialistic and I just wanted the best of everything because, during my whole childhood, I didn't have, the best of everything. And that's exactly what I wanted. And then now, reflecting back, it's like, no, you really don't need anything materialistic or anything like that. So now I'm more so, what can I do to live a sustainable life? So I think all of those sacrifices definitely, got me to where I am now, still owning my home.
And what took you to Brisbane initially? Was it a career? Was it a love interest? Was it there's cheap property up there?
I was actually born here in Brisbane and, all my mob's from up here. My family live up here. But then, I just grew up down in Sydney with my mom and my younger siblings. But, I definitely always wanted to come home. That was my goal. Everyone in high school knows that I was the one that was like, yes, I'm going to move back to Queensland as soon as I finish school. So I was like, yep, that's where I'm going to buy my home. And it's just, that home feeling, I've cultivated such a safe and sacred space here within my home. And I think that's what a lot of people just, lose sight of, having that lack of, stability growing up. That's all that I ever wanted, as an adult now. That's why I think it's so important for, if you do have the opportunity to buy your own home, you really do that just so that you can cultivate that safe and sacred space just for yourself. And, when you have family and that can, really have that impact on that generational wealth.
Yeah, it's this mind game that a lot of us go through. It's like, oh, do I just rent somewhere or do I buy, but it's more expensive to buy and or whatever. But I just think where you live, it is such a personal and lifestyle choice. And I've shared before, my personality was I need to put my roots down and I just need that stability, particularly when I was starting a business. And, I've grown and changed and now I'm kind of renting temporarily because I've just moved to Newcastle. But the longer term thing is for me to buy again because I need that connection. I need my home. It's my safe space. It's my refuge. It's all this it's a weird feeling. And a lot of people don't get that. They're like, yeah, whatever. Like we've all met people that just travel and have, travel around the world and just nomad type thing. I just can't do that.
Yeah, I'm the exact same, like me, because I've just got my animals. I'm like, as long as me and my animals are fine, that's all that I care about. So, yeah, just having this space has just been so important to me. And I think that's why, you know, I just continue to keep on doing what I need to do, and also empowering other women to be able to do the exact same thing.
Mm. How did you find corporate life? Because it's so different to what you're doing now. Like, what was it like for you in corporate land?
Yeah, well, definitely just the culture of how it all is. Like, I'm a very chill, relaxed type of person, and I love to be, you know, in my own little world and whatever, and just have that autonomy to be able to, you know, basically do what I want within the role and just make the role mine. So I think the corporate world, it's all great and all, and, you know, it's suited for a lot of people, but it's definitely not suited for me. I think working at the foundation, it's really, you know, opened my eyes to be able to work alongside, you know, such amazing people that are here for the right reasons, that are doing the work, and, you know, just seeing the impact is what inspires me every single day. And just having that, you know, that personal connection to all the communities that we get to go out, like, we have the best job, you know, going out to Indigenous communities and being able to bring that financial literacy education out there, and, you know, just having that, you know, that ease in for a lot of the communities that aren't connected with the financial services and providers. So we've like to link in with those, you know, providers and services to, you know, close that type of gap towards that, if you know what I mean. So it's just, yeah, we're just in such a good position to be able to do so. And just seeing the impact is just amazing. It's like you can just go out and just talk about money, you know, and there'll be people that have never, ever spoken about money before, and that's the first conversation. Or people that, you know, don't even have a savings account. So just that first point of contact, and just, you know, those little things that a lot of us lose sight of. And, you know, that can be so much and more significant for a lot of people that are out on the grounds.
So you're a bit of a money nerd, like you like money, you're in the financial world, and now you're in First Nations Foundation. What's your view of, like, your own personal finances? Are you a spender? Are you a saver?
Yeah. So for me, I think the difference between, you know, the work that we do, especially through the Women's Project, you know, we do it through a cultural and more of a holistic lens. You know what I mean? I feel like a lot of people talk about, you know, money this, money that, which is fair and all of that, which is fine. But it's like mentally, you know, we all want, you know, to have that mindset that we're abundant, capable, and educated. You know, spiritually, we want to be at ease and have that financial contentment. And then physically, we all want that financial freedom. So I think it's just embedding the spirituality of what our culture is into the money world. I think that's something that I'm really passionate about, because, you know, culturally, that's always going to be embedded in me, is my culture and my spirituality. So how can we, you know, bring it in a money sense as well, out in the ground and out in community, and just kind of, you know, that different lens into money around that mindset, you know, the money shame and all of that stuff as well, and just bringing that all into the one type of conversation.
Mm. Like, to take that one step further in your own life, if you do have a money decision that you need to make, it's not just this head thing. It's like, it's almost a feeling and spiritual that I need to vibe it out, or want of a better word. Like, is that, am I going down the right path with how you view money and teach and whatnot?
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, just for me, it's all about, you know, just having that financial contentment. I feel like, you know, it's one thing to have a financial goal, but then it's another thing for how you actually feel about money. What is your relationship with money? You know, for a lot of our mob, you know, we've had that, you know, that really big gap between, you know, there was a stolen generation, the stolen wages, and it's like superannuation. A lot of people think, you know, it's basically the same as, you know, stolen wages. You know, it's money that you cannot access, it's money that you cannot take. So it's about how can we educate our mob to, you know, have better decisions when it comes to money. So for me, you know, it's all about, like, I don't have everything together. Of course, we never really do, but I'm just very strict. And I also allow myself to have, you know, a luxury budget. You know, I'm just more realistic with my budget. And, you know, I'm ensuring that, you know, I'm working hard, I'm paying my bills, you know, I'm saving, and I'm also living a comfortable and relaxed life, because I feel like it's so much easier when you have that healthy work-life balance. And, you know, I'm grateful that through all of the lived experiences that I've had, it's just, you know, I'm at that perfect balance now where I can, you know, work hard but also enjoy the self-care part of it as well.
Yeah, I like what you said there. Like, you talked about contentment, and I've been, like, me personally and with the community that, you know, I help lead with My Millennial Money, because everyone's like, oh, what's your current goal? What's your financial goal? And everything's striving and trying to get. But, like, I wonder, what if we made contentment the goal, and that just removes all money, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just contentment, being at peace, you know, having that contentment that, you know, you've got an emergency budget in case you've got emergency that comes up. You know, you've got another bucket where you've just, you know, if something comes up, if a family member needs help, you've got that bucket there as well. But then you've also got that luxury budget where you can go out, you can have that financial self-care. You know, health is wealth for me. So I spend a lot of money. Like, I don't go out clubbing or drinking or anything like that. So my money is really towards, you know, health and wealth. And it's around, you know, like Pilates, I'll get like really good food and all of that stuff. So it's just like, how can you have a better quality of life whilst not sacrificing the things that you love?
Yeah, could not have said it better. Okay, we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll talk about the Indigenous Women's Financial Wellness Initiative that Larisha is part of and is heading up as part of the First Nations Foundation. We'll be right back.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
Okay, we are back. A lot of you know that First Nations Foundation are a charity that I support financially, and I will continue to do so, because a lot of people have said to me, oh, Glenn, you need to do more in the financial literacy space for Indigenous Australians. And I've personally taken the view, right or wrong, that the best that I can do is to support charities like First Nations Foundation, who are actually on the ground, who are actually doing things in a cultural way and all that stuff. Am I wrong to think that, Larisha? Is that a good thing that I just outsource, you know, the money literacy stuff for Indigenous Australians to people and foundations like First Nations that actually know what the need is most? Is that a fair statement? I don't know. I'm just shooting the breeze.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like, you know, there's a lot of grassroots Indigenous organizations that are already out there doing the work. And it's so important that, you know, as allies, as people that are living on First Nations country, it's so important to have that, you know, that self-reflection and, you know, just having that time to think about, you know, what are you doing to honor Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, you know, whether that be supporting Black businesses, supporting, you know, the non-for-profit charities like First Nations Foundation and the work that we do, because, you know, the work is already there. It already exists. There's already people, there's already communities that are already going out there doing the work. So I think just supporting and, you know, listening to our stories, linking with those organizations and learning from, you know, the elders and the people that are out on the grounds and, you know, volunteering with them as well, just to, you know, have that allyship and also, you know, take that accountability and not just, you know, not just going there to just show up, but actually stay there and actually listen and prioritize and, you know, have your hand out there to help all of these organizations that are already doing the existing work.
Yeah, that's so important because, you know, in different times, there's been different posts in the Facebook group around different types of state-based charities, and a lot of them are grassroots one. I know there's one in Victoria, Pay the Rent, for example. Mm-hmm. And I think it is just important to step back and think, well, okay, how can I honour Indigenous Australians? How can I honour Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and give back? So it's not just this, I don't know, one charity fits all thing, isn't it? It's mm-hmm. what aligns with your own heart, what you can see is happening on the ground. And I guess I'm just pretty much saying this is exactly why that I've supported First Nations Foundation, because you guys actually do a lot in the financial literacy space. And, mm-hmm. you know, we are a money podcast. We are an organisation. So I'm happy to give First Nations Foundation and the work that you're doing a platform any day of the week.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, definitely. And especially, you know, thinking of, you know, day-to-day things, you know, we're all consumers and we're all, you know, in the society as a collective. And it's like buying from black businesses, you know, are you getting an Indigenous caterer? Do you have Indigenous dancers? You know, in all different types of services all over, you know, there's any place online that you can look at that supporting a black business, because, you know, we all want to become economically empowered, you know, that economic independence to, you know, really serve our communities as well. So just putting that money back into black businesses, here is how you can really support us as well.
Yeah, awesome. So you're heading up the Indigenous Women's Financial Wellness Initiative / project. Talk to us about the work that you're doing as part of this project.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been a crazy 2 years, that's for sure. So yeah, in response to COVID-19, the Indigenous Women's Financial Wellness Strategy was created to really, you know, economically empower our Indigenous women, and, you know, having all these tools and resources available to women all over the country. So we've got our My Money Dream program, which is an online financial literacy program, and that is, you know, Indigenous women led. So that was, you know, created by Indigenous people for Indigenous people. So it's really got that, you know, that cultural lens, and really, you know, diving deep into, you know, firstly, how different it is for Indigenous people and how we, you know, perceive wealth, and, you know, of all the past knowledge and policies that, you know, were never built to really support us. So it's like understanding the background and the history of, you know, Indigenous Australia economically. And then we go into, you know, we do a money health check, you do budgeting, saving, bill automation, all of that sort of stuff. And then we've also got, you know, a couple of extra ones where you can do, where it's about like car loans, superannuation, tax, home loan, and all of that stuff. So that's one part of it. So the My Money Dream training program. Another part of that is every month we'll do like a money masterclass type of series. And we've got, you know, different topic online webinars that we host every month, which is really good. You know, we really will invite somebody in where they can share their story, because, you know, we learn so much just by sharing these stories. And especially when you've come from, you know, people that have never spoken about money, or they've had that money shame, or, you know, have that money lack mindset. So it's just really empowering to, you know, connect with other people. And I think just having that cultural lens and that, you know, that relatability and that culturally safe space for our women is just so important. So we've got that. Another thing that we do, we've got our private Facebook group, which we've nearly got 2,000 members, which is really awesome. So we've got women that will share their stories in there. We're constantly sharing our tools and resources and stuff as well. We've got our Tomorrow Money website. So that's at www.tomorrowmoney.com/women. So there's all types of resources, you know, from financial self-care, financial wellness, anything to do with money related topics as well. So it's an online resource hub. And this is also a great, hub for non-Indigenous people as well. So you can go on there and learn, you know, as well. So it's really great. What else have we been doing?
You've been quite busy.
Yeah, it's been crazy busy. But yeah, we also do like our workshops in person as well. So it's either online or in person, which is really great now that, you know, we're able to travel again. So we've done some really amazing trips this year. And then in honor of NAIDOC Week, we will be launching our women's podcast, which is called Rich Black Women. So there you can follow stories of strength, adversity, and resilience. So we've got, you know, a lot of Indigenous women that will be sharing their stories. And, you know, it just goes to deepen awareness about the unique economic inequities that First Nations women face. So, you know, if you want to learn more, hear more from all of our women, this is really great to listen as well.
Awesome. Hey, if you want to send us any graphics or anything like that, email it through and we will absolutely promote the heck out of it on Instagram and all that this week.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Yeah, I can send you the Instagram page.
Awesome. Yeah, do that. And we'll put a link in the show notes, everyone. So if you want to go and have a listen to that new podcast, give it a subscribe, give it a like, give it a review, all the good things. Let's just get the word out because it is good work that in my mind, I say FNF. It is good work that FNF are doing. It is good work that First Nations Foundation are doing. And, you know, we just want to spread the word. So if someone's listening like, oh, this sounds really cool, how can I be involved? Now, one way is to, you know, shut your mouth, give us some money. Like, that's one way. But like, are there any other ways that people can be involved in the foundation?
Yeah, absolutely. So through the My Money Dream training, you can actually become a mentor. So this is really great, you know, for people that want to be that leading, you know, that facilitator within the My Money Dream training. So you can actually do that. Or if you want to actually contribute like an article on our Tomorrow Money website, you can do so. And of course, you know, any volunteer opportunities ever come up, definitely reach out to the team. But yeah, that's ways that you can get
or even like listen to the podcast, share it, the podcast, Instagram, on socials. Like social media does go a long way, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, share the Instagram, you know, really get those stories out there and amplify the First Nations voices.
Yeah. And that's what kind of, you know, I want to do as part of, you know, my little corner of the ecosystem is to use this platform for good with a variety of different, you know, things throughout the year. And I would even say, Larisha, anytime something might come up in your world and you're like, oh, I want to jump on My Millennial Money and tell everyone about it, well, just email us and just jump on. Like, we're all chill.
Yeah, thanks so much.
So as you can see, there's lots going on at First Nations Foundation. And one thing that I'm a big believer in is kind of changing the trajectory, or however you say that word, I can't even say it, of somebody's life. And, you know, if you donate $20 to First Nations Foundation, you do not know how far that money could go. It could change the next, you know, Larisha who was 17-year-old's life. You know what I mean? Like, we can't quantify the magnification of any money that we kind of plant in good soil, right? Like, it's all about, you know, legacy, next generation, you know, really empowering people to be the best version that they can be and, you know, with their money and life, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it comes back to it only takes one person to make an impact. So I think, yeah, we think that we're just doing something so tiny, but that could mean something so big to anybody else. Like a couple of weeks ago, we were actually in East Arnhem Land and we did some training out there. And, you know, for us, you know, we've got our, you know, our savings accounts up and whatever. But for some of these, you know, youth workers that we were helping, it was just all about, they didn't have savings goals. So at that point, they were like, oh, well, now I actually have savings goals. I want something to work towards. We helped them open up a savings account and it was something so little and something so tiny out of our day that, you know, can really build a foundation for their future, you know, for their family as well. And when they're embodying that type of person, other people around them will want to mirror that and want to do the exact same. So I think that's what's so important, that, you know, when we're empowering one person, we're actually empowering a whole community.
Do you have any stories top of mind as we finish about someone that you may have met in your travels this year who have had a positive impact from the work that you guys are doing?
Yeah, so end of last year, I ran a 5-week money masterclass, and we had, you know, so many lovely women from all over join. And, you know, through that we did like, you know, a money health check. We did the budgeting, spending leaks and all of that stuff. And then a couple of months later, this woman actually put everything into practice, which is really great. You know, she knuckled down for those couple of months, and then she ended up moving into her first place, you know, securing a full-time job, moving out independently as well. So it's like, just from that can be something changing somebody's life. So it's like, you know, the tiniest thing makes the biggest impact. And now, you know, she's able to have that financial security and that financial freedom. And now she's got a job, she's living out on her own, you know, so she's really, you know, taken so much just from that masterclass. And now her future, you know, will be abundant, and, you know, she can, you know, teach everybody else around her as well.
Yeah, that's so awesome. So there you go. It's like, you know, we talk about all this stuff, but it actually has tangible real life results, right? And that's why we do it. Mm-hmm. So, and that's exactly right there. Like, you know, I could send her one of my online courses at no cost, but what do I know about anything? I'm just some white guy from the city. And I don't, you know, I wrote down like one thing that you said that I really liked was that cultural lens. And, you know, the best value that I can do is give my money and my energy to your foundation, because you can do things with that cultural lens, and I can just support you and scream off the rooftops, everyone support this foundation, because yeah, it's just such a better outcome.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, healing ourselves is that generational wealth for all of us, whether we're non-Indigenous, Indigenous, that's all across the collective, you know, when we heal ourselves, which, you know, we're honouring the land that we're living on, you know, we're working in jobs that, you know, we've got a purpose, we're actually making impact, we're there for the right reasons, you know, healing ourselves will create that generational wealth for every single person across the board.
Love it. Larisha Jerome, First Nations Foundation, thank you so much for joining us on My Millennial Money today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We acknowledge the Awabakal people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast. My Millennial Money supports a variety of charities, and we encourage you to consider giving as part of your overall financial strategy. If you would like some giving options, or if you're unsure about which charity you can support, head to mymillennial.money/charities for more info. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.